Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined, as usual, by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, his head is in Toronto, his heart is in Winnipeg, and his liver is somewhere near Buffalo, New York. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant?
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. The heart transplant is fine.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Also with us, the only man I know brave enough to take on a Denny's Grand Slamwich head-to-head and survive. He's also a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and a senior editor at Sportsnet Magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
I'm doing better than when I attempted to eat that Grand Slamwich. I survived, but it beat me.
I don't know how people look at themselves in the mirror after they eat at Denny's. It's just, it's horrifying.
They look with slightly wider eyes.
And you also look at yourself to see just what physical effects it's had, because they are immediate and they are horrifying.
Yeah.
On today's show, we will be getting into our domestic equivalent of the FA Cup. With FA Cup fever sweeping England, we figure it's a good time to talk about the Nutrilite Canadian Championship, which I guess is our FA Cup equivalent, what it's going to look like in 2012 and what it may hold in the years ahead. Also in today's show, we'll be speaking with Montreal Impact and Canadian national team midfielder Patrice Bernier about what it's like to be coming back home and where he sees his future going. Later on in the show, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as insomnia, amateur psychology, and a cursed Canadian invention. And stay tuned for Taste the Trivia, where you'll find out how you could be a part of this podcast and win some swag courtesy of Umbro Canada. Or possibly Umbro Canada, if I've been mispronouncing it this whole time. But before any of that, gentlemen, I have to ask, Grant, I'm going to come to you. I alluded to it in the opening there. This past weekend, you had the chance to do something that you have not done in 16 years. I mean, it's not strictly related to soccer, but, you know, we're some Canadian guys, so we'll get into it nonetheless. So 16 years since, you've been able to do what?
Well, it's true. I danced with a girl. I slow danced with her.
Did you get your hands all the way up to her waist?
Yes.
That's pretty dangerous stuff. It's strange that you would get it going kind of early in life and then have such a drought like that.
I know, yeah. Well, I mean, the Playboy lifestyle has definitely slowed down over the past 16 years.
Is that the lifestyle you've been living?
Yes.
Are you going to answer the question?
16 years ago.
I would suggest that the 16-year break is largely due to Playboy. Not that Playboy hasn't happened in the interim.
Slow dance with a girl, then discovered Playboy magazine and said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What are real girls for?
I don't need to be nice
right
to this.
Right here on paper.
I don't need to be nice to this magazine. I don't have to buy it a corsage. I don't even have to mix Kool-Aid and vodka and take it out.
Meet its dad.
It's
all right, but
Hugh
what,
Hefner?
What's That's not the real story. Grant is, in real life, very much
right.
A lady killer. What's the true story?
No, that's not true. I saw the Winnipeg Jets live and in person in Buffalo, New York, and it was fantastic.
Well, seen them at all, not just in Buffalo. We were in Buffalo.
I know. Yeah, no, I saw them. I watched them play in person.
So how did you feel about that experience? Not the next morning, but...
No, it was just sort of, I mean, I know we always say in Canadian soccer, you know, everything seems hopeless and you know, our dreams will never come true, but I sort of felt... By being there watching the Winnipeg Jets after having them gone for so long and thinking that they'll, you know, never be back and it's over, and then to see them again, maybe it's something that can give hope to Canadian soccer fans.
That's a very good way.
Or it's just a stupid coincidence and we're still doomed for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, we're kind of banking on stupid coincidences. Jamie, a lot of people have kind of a negative image of cities like Buffalo, New York, so you were there, you know, we were all there.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say anything to dispel some of the negative stereotypes people have about that city?
I'll say this. I tweeted this while in Buffalo, and I had also, I mean, at the time I was on about my 13th vodka Red Bull because for some reason that was cheaper than beer, and once you start that ball rolling, you really can't stop. But I tweeted this. Buffalo is a weird mixture of Gotham City and the opening scene of 28 Days Later. It's got the same kind of Gotham City architecture, but we walked up Main Street, which is not actually a street, but it's kind of a tram line.
Pedestrian walkway with no pedestrians.
Which actually is called Main Street. You're not...
But it is called Main Street. And it's very much like the center of downtown, and there was nobody. And this was just after the Jets game had broken up, maybe an hour after the game ended. And we walked up there, and we passed one hobo with a shopping cart full of bottles, and we
passed... yelling something about the apocalypse.
The apocalypse was not, and we passed one car, and we really had the run of the city. We could have done anything, and I'm pretty sure that if we had done this 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later than we did, and it was about a 7-block, 8-block walk, we would have been murdered. But I think all the, you know, potential murderers and muggers were just busy doing other things at that particular time.
Well, then that is not just a stupid coincidence. It's a terrific coincidence. And you referring to the opening of 28 Days Later explains why Grant was staggering around in a medical gown. I was kind of wondering about that at the time, but...
That was actually because of the hoagie, Jim's Stakeout.
Oh, God.
I had this hoagie. I think I'm going to have to somehow... I'm going to deal with that later in life somehow. Like, when I meet my maker or something, I'm going to confront this hoagie again.
Your maker
will
turn out to be a Jim's Stakeout sandwich. And you're going to have to grapple with it all over again.
St. Peter's just taking a tally of the number of Jim's Stakeout sandwiches everyone has had. Let's move on, Grant, from your intestinal distress to an item that is actually of interest to the people listening to this show. As I said, FA Cup madness sweeping England. All of the moments and the events that took place over the past weekend. Of course, you had the Manchester Derby there, the triumphant return of Thierry Henry to Arsenal. And it's always an exciting competition with the potential for upsets. We have our sort of quasi-equivalent of it here, the Neutralite Canadian Championship, or as some ardent fans like to refer to it instead, the Voyageurs Cup. Last year, it took place between four teams. This year, it'll be four teams again. Next year, with Ottawa joining NASL, we'll be looking at five teams. So why don't we take a look at this year first and then get into the way that this could potentially expand out further. We've seen a couple of conflicting reports thus far about what the semifinal matchups will be. We've seen one report saying that it will be Toronto, Edmonton, and Vancouver versus Montreal. Another saying that it'll be Toronto versus Montreal and Vancouver versus Edmonton. For what it's worth, we spoke to the CSA and they said that there's been no official confirmation one way or another, and that we won't get word about this for a couple of weeks. So, Jamie, I'll turn to you first.
Mm-hmm.
You have your option for this year. Do you have a preference as to the way that the tournament looks this year in terms of the teams and the way they meet and whether we have a single-legged or a two-legged final?
I like the idea of a two-legged final. I think it adds a bit of extra drama.
And thunderstorms.
And a bit of pathos from the weather. But everyone's just kind of hoping to get Edmonton, if we're honest. The MLS teams are just kind of pulling to get drawn against Edmonton. I would prefer to see it more regional, and you just kind of stick with that. Edmonton against Vancouver, Montreal and Toronto, it just kind of builds up a rivalry. I know it's harder for Toronto, and I admit I am a Toronto fan, but it just seems like it would be more fun, really. And it's easier for fans to get from A to B. It's not really that easy for Vancouver-Edmonton fans, but it's certainly easier than getting Vancouver to Montreal, say.
Now, if Toronto were to play Montreal in the semifinal of the Voyageurs Cup, that would mean five meetings this year, Montreal's first year in MLS. Is that too many, do you think?
No.
What about six? Is that
flat
too
out?
Many?
No,
six, 5.5, too many. So
all right,
six over, definitely too many.
The over under is 5.5.
It is.
Grant, do you have any preferences as to the way the tournament looks this year, or would you rather take a look ahead to the way that things could be in the years to come?
Well, I mean,
essentially, I'm opening it up, and you can refer to your talking points.
This is a hint to take a look ahead. So, if Ottawa is going to be in the tournament next year, I would kind of like to see a. I actually do like the geographic format, but I think with five teams, it's going to be a bit too complicated. So I would like to see a seeded tournament next year.
Well, theoretically, the tournament is seeded this year. I think that's where some of the confusion is as to where Montreal actually stands this year, because they are moving to MLS. You know, they're in MLS, which is the higher league, but they finished below FC Edmonton in NASL last year. So that opens the question. Where are they seated? Are they seated fourth?
Yeah, there's nothing to argue about.
Yeah. Also opens the question of why they're in MLS and Edmonton isn't. But moving right along.
Jamie, you're getting dangerously close to some idea of promotion, relegation.
No Joey Saputo in Edmonton.
So, Grant?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on this tournament going forward? Next year, we got five teams.
Next year. So I'm saying next year with five seated teams, you can have a first round with seeds 5 through 3. They play a simple round robin. Ottawa is going to be the fifth seed because they haven't done anything to seed themselves this year. That means Ottawa would have to play two games on the road.
So each team plays. There are three games total.
Three games total. So the fourth seed would get like one home game, one away game. The third seed would get two home games. The fifth seed, two away games. And that's going to be Ottawa. So basically, Ottawa really gets screwed over in this format, which I don't think anyone across the country would really have a problem with screwing over Ottawa.
Yeah, the rest of the country kind of wants to screw Ottawa for once.
Well, it's not like it's not federal politicians playing on the team.
It is. We don't know. They haven't named players yet, have they?
That's true. Yeah,
Tony Clement will be the starting goalkeeper
at striker. Jim Flaherty.
I think I read Duncan Fletcher, who writes a blog for Sportsnet.ca and also for the wonderful Waking the Red. He had a blog basically proposing that we just open this up completely moving forward, like the FA Cup, where they're semi-pro and the pro and all the pro teams in Canada. And he even proposes, you know, you go ahead and you have the Challenge Cup winner, which is the trophy for the best amateur team in the country, and they make it in. And he proposes the university teams make it in, like the best university teams, and really opening it up, really making a multi-stage grassroots tournament that eventually will probably be won by an MLS team, but it just gets everybody more involved, and it gets a lot of grassroots excitement going.
Well, what do you think about that, Jamie? Is that something that's feasible or something that should be looked towards?
I think definitely it's something that should be looked at. I think maybe Mr. Fletcher goes a bit too far. I think the eligibility for university teams, it just wouldn't work.
He just got carried away with himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's
so excited.
The ball got rolling and it rolled right over him. No, I think it's actually a very good idea. And I think that there's definitely something there, probably a smaller scale version of what he proposes or what, you know, his ideal world vision would be. But you can imagine how much fun it would be, like it is in England, when you see a small team play against a huge team, and they have revenue sharing for the, you know, the gate receipts. If we can get people to go out and see a small team, even an amateur team or a semi-pro team, a CSL team that plays against Toronto FC, and they do well, they hold their own, maybe they even win. That's amazing. And then it just builds the kind of grassroots excitement for the game that Canada really needs,
like Mighty Ducks the movie.
You're going to put children out there. That's how far we're going.
Mentioned to me earlier, I think this is when we were talking about it before the show, but CONCACAF is not thrilled with the idea of semi-pro teams because the winner of the Voyagers Cup goes to the CONCACAF Champions
League. See, now that's the excuse I've heard.
And, but isn't the winner of that thing decided anyway, beforehand? What do they care?
Hi-o!
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, it's all nepotism, Grant. You know, right. It's collusion with Torad's FC. The problem with that argument, though, is that the winner of the U.S. Open Cup for the last several years has been given a berth in the CONCACAF Champions League, and half of the teams in that competition are fully amateur. I mean, as you said, Jamie, the chances of, the New York Brooklynites or whatever amateur team is in the U.S. Open Cup actually going ahead and winning and beating second and first division teams to win the competition, it's a minuscule possibility, but it is possible. So, I mean, I mean, this is something that we would have to check into. But the argument that teams that are outside of MLS or NASL that are in Canada couldn't take part because they're not fully professional, it just doesn't hold water. Because you look across the border at the U.S. Open Cup, who recently announced that it's expanding to 64 teams this year. All the teams in the top three flights, as well as some teams from PDL and amateur teams, are taking part.
I mean, the Americans have a lot of heft within CONCACAF, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, Grant, are you suggesting that CONCACAF would write one set of rules for the Americans and possibly the Mexicans and another set of rules for everyone else? Is that really what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But the point is that there's nothing intrinsically there preventing us. And I should say, Jamie, you can go ahead and then I'll tally up all the teams we have that could be in this competition.
Well, I mean, this is kind of a separate point, and it probably speaks more to what you were about to say. But, I mean, one of the problems—
You don't know what I was about to say.
Oh, I know. No, not really. What I would argue is one of the biggest problems. I mean, you can kind of get around CONCACAF possibly with a well-placed briefcase full of I don't know what. Possibly money.
I'm just going to put this briefcase on the desk.
Yeah.
Back out of the room slowly.
No, I think that argument can pretty much sway CONCACAF. If we, you know, you organize it right, you can get Canadian semi-pro teams in. But, I mean, getting from A to B, getting to these tournaments would be hard. Most of the CSL teams obviously are close to Toronto and one in Quebec. If they have to play Vancouver, who's paying for that? If they have to get to Vancouver, I mean, these are really small teams, and in some cases, amateur teams that the proposal would be how do they get from A to B?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be more of a logistics thing, really.
Yeah,
it does seem like that's
and that's always been one of the most damning arguments about having a national league, which is something that we discussed a number of weeks ago on this show, is how do these teams get from point A to point B? I mean, Canada's got 9 teams in the PDL right now, which is, you know, if you loosely define the North American soccer pyramid, you could say that it's the fourth division. It's a developmental league for the most part, so it's semi-pro at best. We got teams in London, Ontario, Hamilton, Ontario, Toronto, the Toronto Lynx, who existed prior to 2007. Many of you in Toronto who are listening to this may be surprised to know that soccer existed before 2007.
You're talking crazy.
Teams in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Winnipeg, the team that in Grant's mind
played last year, right? Yeah.
Doesn't exist until 2 years from now. Ottawa, Abbotsford, BC, Victoria. You've also got the Whitecaps residency program in PDL now. There are PDL teams in the U.S. Open Cup. You know, why can't there be Canadian equivalents? You've also got, Jamie, as you said, 14 teams in the CSL, which is the Ontario-based league. 10 teams set to play next year in the Pacific Coast Soccer League out in BC. You add in a number of other teams, and that is a big competition. But I don't know. Travel is, as always, going to be the biggest, the biggest bugaboo. But let's remove the logistical worries there for a second, and just, you know, Grant,
yes,
theoretically, quickly, if this is something that teams would be interested in, do you see value in looking towards this in terms of an actual open Canadian, you know, Open Cup at some
definitely.
Point in the
future? I mean, basically, for all the reasons Jamie just listed earlier, I think that it would get a lot of people across the country involved in soccer in a way that they wouldn't otherwise be.
You mean by watching it?
By watching it, by investing some interest in the team, yes.
And think about it, Jamie. You could have Toronto FC versus the Toronto Lynx. You could have the Vancouver Whitecaps against the Whitecaps residency. You know, a team full of Canadians versus a team with no Canadians.
Impact
versus their academy.
I mean, I don't think this tournament is ever going to quite reach the same level of importance or capture the imagination of Canadians in the same way the FA Cup does with people in England.
Oh, I don't think it would capture the attention of Canadians in the way that the FA Cup captures the attention of Canadians.
That's
never mind
true.
Of people in England. But Jamie,
touché.
Jamie, is it something worth theoretically hoping towards nonetheless?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about Winnipeg and whether or not they could have a team and be financially successful.
Do.
No, and be
played last season
long term and be financially successful. But imagine the interest as just even if it's just a one off. Toronto FC comes to town, and these are people who, you know, I mean, Winnipeg. I don't know how many Toronto FC, how many MLS games anyone there would ever have gotten to. But all of a sudden, there's an MLS team in town.
Well,
I think
they love to hate Toronto. So I mean,
well, exactly. I mean, there you go.
Grant, in your mind, everyone just hates Ottawa, hates Toronto, hates Buffalo.
A walking Canadian stereotype.
People should stop hating. They should start loving. Quickly, some people hate, some people love the name of this tournament, so I'm going to, again, quickly throw it out to you guys. As I said, I mentioned the two monikers by which the tournament is referred. Technically, it is the Canadian Championship. The trophy awarded at the end is the Voyageurs Cup. The corporate sponsor is Neutralite. People usually just call it the Neutralite Cup or Neutralite Games or whatnot. But I think it is important for people to realize if they didn't. The Voyageurs, of course, being the supporters group of the Canadian national teams. The Voyageurs Cup existed prior to this Canadian Championship format. It was created, bought, and paid for by members of the supporters group years ago and given out to the Canadian team that finished the highest in whatever league they were playing in. Now, for most years, this was just Montreal and Vancouver playing against each other in a lower division. Now it's been opened up, and a lot of the Voyageurs are very adamant that the tournament retains the name there, and that they actually call it the Voyageurs Cup. Jamie, I'll put it out to you first. What do you call this tournament, and does it matter as long as the tournament is getting attention and press?
I don't think it really matters in the long run. I tend to call it the Voyageurs Cup. And if they need the money, then I would say sponsorship is that important. I mean, Canadian soccer certainly isn't rolling in the Benjamins. So, you can keep the trophy itself called the Voyageurs Cup. I'm perfectly happy with that arrangement. Neutralite is it's a sponsor that for years I didn't even know what the product was.
I'm still not sure.
I had
sure
to look
it
into it. It's some kind of vitamin supplement thing.
Ah, okay.
So it's not like it's really blowing. It's not like that name is taking over everything because most people won't even know what it is.
Yeah, but at least they hear the name and they think, I need something that's light and nutritious. I'll look into some Nutrilite products. Grant,
yes.
Despite Jamie's proclamation that the Benjamins aren't rolling in, you mentioned you're living the high-flying playboy lifestyle. So what do you think about the naming and the nomenclature surrounding this tournament? Does it matter to you?
I just think as Canadian soccer fans and people involved in the Canadian soccer community, there's bigger fish to fry. I just don't think – I mean, I can understand, you know, people who want to keep the FA Cup called the FA Cup, even though it's sponsored by Budweiser. I think it's next year.
No, it's currently sponsored by Budweiser.
I mean, they still call it the FA Cup, but it is sponsored by Budweiser, and it's like the Carling Cup. I mean, people still refer to it that way. If we want to, we'll just refer to it as the Voyagers Cup. But I think this tournament just doesn't have the history or the importance for people to start to worry about what it should be called. Preserving the name. I mean,
I'm not sure it has an image that can be tarnished by sponsorship.
Well, I don't know. Montreal throwing that game against Toronto to essentially gift them the tournament a few years ago.
That'll tarnish the image more than the name. A vitamin supplement.
Montreal
the Tostitos Cup.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
The GoDaddy.com Canadian Championship. The Canadins Canadian Championship. Let me be absolutely clear with the wording I just used. I am not suggesting that Montreal threw the game against Toronto. I'm just saying they put
it. That's what it sounded like to me.
No, it is what I said, but that is not what I meant. I simply meant they threw it a less than full strength lineup, and Toronto took advantage of it. They still had to put 6 goals on the board, and they did.
All right. Yeah, the lawyer sitting in the corner is nodding in approval, Squiz.
Oh, very good.
He looks really bored.
At the end of the day, I mean, it's technically called the Barclays Premier League. I don't think I've ever heard anyone refer to it as that other than broadcasters who are contractually obligated to do so. And so I think that, if the fact that there are companies more and more that are actually willing to invest money in Canadian soccer is a good thing because, Canadian soccer fans, us included, have often lamented the fact that there's not enough cash and not enough resources devoted to the game in this country. And if there are companies that are willing to say, here is some money, do with it what you will to promote Canadian soccer. I mean, as long as it's not something especially garish and ridiculous, I don't see why there should be a problem with
Ashley Madison, something like that.
Oh man.
What?
The Ashley Madison Championship. That's not a tournament that
the
we
want. The Du Maurier for Children Championship.
Get him started early.
Wow. Up next, we're going to be speaking to a man who will be taking part in this year's Nutrilite Canadian Championship for the Voyageurs Cup, Montreal Impact midfielder Patrice Bernier. We are now joined on the line for Montreal, Quebec by Montreal Impact and Canadian national team midfielder Patrice Bernier. Patrice, welcome to the Some Canadian Guys show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Glad to be speaking with you. First question we have to ask, of course, you played for the Impact in the early part of the last decade, played in Europe for about 10 years, and then in December it was announced that you would be returning to Montreal. So how does it feel to be coming home?
Oh, it feels nice. I think it's not yet, hasn't really sunk in yet completely. I think I'm going to have to wait till I get on the pitch and I meet my teammates, and then I realize that I'm not going back to Europe or not leaving home again. But it's in the terms of being at home around family, it's really nice already. It's been hectic meeting everybody, so I think on the plus side, it's going to be nice to be around everybody on a daily basis.
So, Patrice, does the fact that you are sort of going to be the face of the franchise in Montreal, did that factor into your decision to come back home?
No, I knew that no matter whoever from the local products that are playing abroad was coming back was somewhat a central figure into representing Montreal Impact and also the brand of being a hometown person. The factor for me was mostly to know that I know that on the pitch I can still contribute, and I just wanted to know if that was in the plans. I didn't want to come back just to be a player that came from here and that's in the team. I wanted to know on a technical standpoint that I was an important part, not just a part, but an important part. So and the fact is I met with the coach, which was good, and to see his plans and to know that I was just not coming back just because it's Patrice Bernier or whoever that came from Montreal or from Quebec was going to come back and play for the Montreal Impact.
Hi, Patrice. I'm just wondering, when you first left Montreal, did you ever anticipate that you would be coming back? That would be there would be a Montreal impact at a high enough level that it would be really, really worth it and really exciting to come back to play for?
Honestly, no, because the time I left was 2002 was my last season. So, and there was no, I don't remember, I think there was a process of Canadian team maybe entering the MLS. Everybody was maybe talking about it, that would be great, but there didn't seem to be any plan. So my plan from the first, when I left Montreal, was to be able to play on a everyday basis on a yearly standpoint to progress. And to go to Europe, where everybody wants to go, that's where it's at. And I presumed I was going to finish my career there. Then slowly things have changed. The football world has changed in Canada drastically in terms of the professional standpoint, and then it makes it possible for a professional player to either think of coming back home or to at least maybe the younger ones to go to the highest level possible. South America before maybe going to Europe. If it could be, it is a great window also now to go to Europe straight from an MLS team.
Yeah, Patrice, you mentioned that there are a number of other Quebec-born players that are doing quite well. Of course, you spent a decade in Europe. Olivier Osien is doing quite well over there as well. Ali Gerba had a number of successful years in Europe. But now you coming back to play for the team and with the impact moving to MLS, the highest level of competition in North America, having the impact at a high level and also having players such as, you know, players being successful in Europe and becoming younger players as well. Do you think that that's going to really help build up the game at a grassroots level in Quebec?
I think the grassroots levels are doing quite well, but it's, of course, it's nice to, I guess, when you grow up to have some sort of image of somebody that has been through the same process and has made it, has had a career, a professional career. So I think whoever was going to come back, for the younger players that are not that look at the Montreal impact now, they can see somebody that has played several years abroad and that there's somebody that we can identify to. I think that's an important factor that, you know, kids or the public likes to have. And the grassroots level, I think it's there, but I think there's still some work to do on to build it up. But now with three professional teams in Canada, that makes it, with the academies now that they have, that makes it a nice way to start off your career and to be prepared mentally and technically also to be a pro. While before, most of us that have left our national team have left quite early from either high school years or even before, and then had to develop and discover what it is to be a professional. So now I think in terms of having local players, it's nice, and it I guess it attaches itself really easier to a young kid that comes from Montreal, from Quebec, to say that some guys have made it and I can go through the same process and have the same career or even better.
Patrice, so when TFC and the Vancouver Whitecaps, they both sort of struggled upon entering MLS, TFC's case, they're still struggling. I'm just wondering, do you think the impact in their first year can buck that trend?
I'm hoping so. I know it's not easy. If you look just the stats, not just the Canadians, but an expansion team, it's only two, and one was Chicago Fire back in the I guess 90s at that time. And the Seattle Sounders have really had a first successful year where they made the playoffs, if you can consider making the playoffs a successful year. But I think the thing is, it's a bit difficult because, we're starting off, it's a team on paper. We have to work a lot to build a team on the field and off the field. The good thing is we're starting with a coach that has played in the league, that knows the league very well, and knows all the systems and knows the team, the players, and maybe has some ideas to mix to how to start it properly. I think the most important is to be competitive from the start and then to build upon that. And hopefully then we can see it's a day-to-day progress, I guess. And then after that, it'll be a game-to-game once the season starts to be able to somewhat during the season say, what are we looking at? I think it's too early to just say, yeah, we want to make the playoffs. I think everybody wants to make the playoffs, but for a first-year franchise, it's to build a competitive team that is going to be hard to beat and that can go for the 3 points on every day and not be looking at the standings and seeing that you're way at the bottom. Maybe it's the importance to compete on par with everybody else and take the points at home, I think, the most important, and then have a good successfully travel and get some points abroad. It's going to be difficult. To be honest, it's not easy. Me, for most, I haven't played in MLS, even though I come from here. And it's going to be an adjustment for everybody. But we have to build a strong team on a day-to-day basis to be able to start the season, knowing that it's not going to be easy to play against the Montreal Impact at home or away.
Now, obviously, you mentioned the fact that making the playoffs and having a successful season is something that the fans in Montreal are really looking forward to. But I'm going to guess that, you know, if another hope that they have for this season is that they can beat Toronto FC at every chance they get. Of course, the Toronto-Montreal rivalry has existed in a number of sports, and now it's going to carry on into MLS. How much are you looking forward to those games between Toronto and Montreal?
Oh, actually, I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be nice to be part of a derby. I've been part of derbies in Europe, but now it has a little bit more flavor to it, more emotions, because I'm from Montreal, going to be playing against some Toronto guys, some guys that are on the national team that are there. So it's going to be something special, and knowing also that I guess Montreal hasn't had the best success right now against TFC. But I do remember when I was in the A-League playing with the Impact against the Toronto Lynx, there was always that animosity, that extra adrenaline to play against the Toronto guys, and probably also Vancouver at one point. But since, you know, there's a history of, like you said, Montreal, Toronto, and other sports, especially hockey, being number one. That's going to be, I think, something special to be able to play against, and we're going to probably meet each other three to maybe four times, if not more. So I think for the fans, it's going to be great. But as a player, being from here, it's going to be a little something special when we play. Hopefully, I guess I'll be playing probably against Joe and some other guys that are there. And that's going to be an interesting game to see how it unfolds, and also the build-up to it the weeks before when we get closer, that how the public is going to really get into it and see that now that this derby is also on the soccer point.
Patrice, so it seems some fans have been kind of confused about this, so we're wondering if you can clarify for us. Are you on a designated player contract?
Nope, I'm not a DP player.
Okay. Now, there have been a number of names that have been thrown out there as wild-eyed rumors when it comes to the Montreal Impact looking to go and get potential designated players. I mean, we've seen names like Del Piero and Materazzi and even Nicolas Anelka. Obviously, he won't be coming. He's going to play in China instead. Do you have any thoughts on any of these big name players coming here? Have you do you have any thoughts on these rumors?
Oh, I guess so far they're only rumors until they're confirmed. I guess, like you said, Anelka, he's not on his way here, so that's for sure. The others, they're rumors. I think that the thing is, these players are great players. Some of them, I think mostly people, when they talk DP, they're looking at strikers or attacking a forward, forwards. And if they come, it would be great. But there's an aspect of two things to look for, to look at is these players usually are they coming for the competitive edge? And I know most of them, they want to live the celebrity life, which is in New York or L.A., and so are they going to be appealed at coming into Montreal, and how is Montreal going to be able to put that forth? But it would be great on a soccer point to have a player of such a high caliber on the team and to have their experience and their know-how to help to build upon, to be better on every day at training and to be better every day games. So, but I guess these are only rumors so far, and for me, until I'm told that they're coming for sure and they're going to be showing up at the office and signing, only speculation and rumors, and I think there's still several weeks until things can happen. But now that with MLS, the good thing is there's a lot of names that are circling of big-name players wanting to come to MLS, so which is a good thing. It means that the league is being supervised elsewhere, mostly in Europe. Right now, I do not know what's going to be happening. If it does, great. If it doesn't, still have to build a team to win and compete.
Now, Patrice, I think you may be selling Montreal a bit short there. I mean, you mentioned New York and L.A. as these glamorous destinations and places where players can really enjoy the city they're in. I mean, I don't know. I'm speaking from a Torontonian's perspective, but if I was going to be coming over from Europe and playing anywhere in Canada in terms of, you know, excitement and a high-flying lifestyle, I'd say Montreal is pretty much up there on the list. So.
Oh, it's not considered – it's not touch on Montreal. I think it's a great city. It's mostly, I know these guys are rock stars in Europe. So if you look at Henri Beckham, if they look at those profiles, being players of the same profile, it's also a standpoint of status with what type of people you hang around. And I don't know if these people, there's another after career football that they're looking at, which is maybe a last paycheck and also something that, like, Beckham, he came to play, but also you know that now he's attached to a lot of celebrities. And even though he doesn't need the money, but, I mean, he's attached to another world, an entertainment world. So that's why I say New York and L.A. is the destination for those guys, because when you're in Europe, those are the two cities that people compare, like, to Paris, to Rome, to all these big cities. Montreal is a fantastic city.
You might not hook up with Tom Cruise in Montreal, is what you're saying.
It's like he might come, but I don't think he's going to come to watch the Montreal Impact unless he has a movie to shoot or some. Exactly, I think that's a thing that people maybe don't think of. But these players in Europe, they're at the same status of these entertainment people. So when they come, most people like to stay with the same status of. They don't want to come in unless they're coming in just to be a nobody and concentrate on playing and stuff like that. But the high-profile names, that's what I'm thinking. They're in their back mind, knowing that it's their maybe the last 1 or 2 years in their career.
Patrice, we're going to switch gears here a bit. You made your return to the Canadian men's national team in 2011. We know the group we have for 2012 in the second round. It's a reasonably tough group. What are your thoughts on this next round of World Cup qualifying for Canada?
I think we're finally not in a group where or a group of death. We've always been around with Mexico. If it's not, it's a very tough group. It's not going to be easy to qualify, but I think in terms of hopes, we can look at this Panama, Cuba, and Honduras, and now we can see that we have it. Higher chance, if you look at it before playing, making it to the final round. We have to take it one game at a time because even though, yes, it's Cuba and Panama and Honduras, Panama has beaten us in the last Gold Cup. Honduras is right now one of the very good teams in CONCACAF, and Cuba, we don't know that much, or at least I don't know that much about them, but it could always be a surprise because this is CONCACAF. Caribbean team, there's always 2 or 3 players you don't really know about that can change the game, and they're a bit unknown. But in terms of possibilities, this is a very good group, and the motivation should be high to try to get the maximum points. I think in the first 3 games, we play the last 2 at home. So and now we just have to be ready, concentrate, focused to get the points. We play Cuba away first. And maximize the points in the first 3 games so that in the last 3 games, then we know mathematically we can still make it. And then you know you can fight for those points away and then collect the 3 points. While last qualifier, I think we only had 1 point out of 2 home games.
Right.
Made it very difficult to actually, then you play Mexico twice. So it was very difficult to actually logically look at it and say, okay, we're going to get 4 points out of Mexico and then still be in it. So the most important is Cuba away game and then the first 2 home games. We have to be really on our A game. We can't afford to have a slip-ups the first last round. We played some lower teams, so maybe we need to be 90 minutes on the top of our game, but in this stage we have to be at the 100%, 110% from the first game, and to set the standard to show Honduras, Panama, Cuba that Canada is not going to be very easy to play against, and that they're going to have to play at their maximum, no matter where or at home.
Patrice, I'm curious. As Canadian fans, we love to debate amongst ourselves which Canadian cities the men's national team should play in to get sort of the best mix of or the most Canadian fans. From a player's perspective, in terms of the stadium or the travel arrangements, which Canadian cities do you guys prefer to play in?
I know, look, I'm not going to pinpoint one city, but I know for most guys it's probably best to play on the east, because when you're coming in from Europe, it's a six, seven hour flight, 6 hour time difference, and that you have to go back to your club and to adjust, especially sometimes when you play a midweek game and you're coming in on a Sunday or a Monday, you have 2-3 days. While if you fly all the way west, it's a longer flight. All these things have to do with recuperating well enough to be able to play the game 100%. So far, when you look at it as the big cities, it's Toronto, Montreal on the east. But so far, I think Toronto might be the that most will be playing, because with the support, the home support. But it's difficult in Canada right now, because, of course, when you play these CONCACAF teams, when you play at home, it's almost like you're away. But now with these, with TFC doing very well at fan base, Vancouver and Montreal, maybe now the people that are following those teams also will be joining, jumping in and be there, so that it's not a, we're not, it's a pro-Canadian crowd. But I think in terms of playing, it's mostly playing on the east because of the traveling. It makes it easier when you come in, at least easier to when you come in to recuperate and to be ready for the games, when it's especially when you come in for a short period of time when it's a midweek game.
You mentioned the support that you get in Toronto, and from a fan's perspective and from a media perspective, it seems to be growing. And how does that impact you as a player, or how much do you notice it as a player getting more and more support coming out for Canada games?
Oh, when I look, if I go specifically to TFC, when you see that the season tickets are sold and the stadium is packed, the people have been following for the past 5 years, no matter the results, you see that people really have soccer at heart even more. And when we've played some games there, I remember, I think it was Costa Rica a few years back, the support is there, and you feel that the people are behind you. And I think it is, no matter people don't think it is, but the 12th man is something that is a factor, because when things don't necessarily go your way during the game, if those people are behind you to push you, it ignites you. If you're not really in the game, then it spurs you on to get back into the game and get back, especially sometimes you might be down 1-0 and it's not done. And you need that that home support to push you on to get back into a game, or to crush a team when you're actually leading. Because like the last game we played, we were leading 2-3-0, but the people still wanted more goals, and that's an important factor to have that. Because I think in CONCACAF, when we go play in the Central American teams, it's a difficult place to play. It's a hostile environment if you want to when you get there. And I think we need to now, Canada as a supporting team of soccer, they're building even more and more, and hopefully we'll be to a point where there'll be 20,000-25,000 people where it's pro-Canadian, and that you barely will notice the away crowd. But it's something building up with the MLS coming in, the teams from MLS, and everything going out. Now I guess the men's national team to have the right result to push the extra people that are maybe doubtful to show up at the stadium and be.
So Patrice, here on our show, we're trying to get sort of a window into the psyche of the Canadian players, coaching staff, and the way we do this is we like to find out the musical tastes of you know the people that we interview, and we've had a wide range so far. Lynyrd Skynyrd, we've had some Drake. So I'm curious for you, what is the last piece of music you bought, downloaded, or whatever it is you do?
Oof, downloaded. That was maybe a while ago. I think it was the J. Cole album, probably the last one I actually bought. But I'm into pretty much all types of music. It depends on the day. I'm a type of person that's the mood changes. I can listen to Adele, like I listen to Drake, like I listen to Simon and Garfunkel. It all depends on the mood, really. I don't like to stick to just one type of music. Of course, I listen, I think, more to hip hop than more often than anything. But I like to change it up to not being routine, kind of, if I can say that, in terms of music too.
So in the Canada dressing room, is there any one player that sort of controls what music you guys listen to?
One player? No. I think there's a few guys that always have, everybody these days actually has an iPod or has an MP3 player. So everybody has their own individual music, but there's always two or three guys just latch it onto the an iPod dock to the Bose system and put it into the locker room, and nobody complained. So far everybody is happy, I guess, with the music that's being played in the locker room.
So it's not like there's one player who puts on their music and it's just awful.
I don't think that really happens. I think everybody pretty much listens to everything. Of course, some people are more prone to other type of music, but everybody's, until it's popular music, I think everybody's fairly, and to be fair, everybody has their own iPod. So even if you're the locker room you don't like, you got your iPod, you put your headphones on, and you concentrate on your game the way you want. So these days it's maybe not like before, where it was maybe we didn't have the iPod systems, and everybody had the cassettes or DVDs, and one guy would play music, and then maybe three or four that really didn't like it, but had to tough it out. So these days you can always lock yourself, isolate yourself with your own iPod, but nobody seems to complain. So in terms of group atmosphere, the Canadian national team is a place where most guys know each other from a while, and it's easy to join in the group, because everybody gets along very well.
That has been Patrice Bernier, midfielder for the Montreal Impact and the Canadian men's national team. Patrice, thanks for talking to us, and good luck this year.
Thanks. It was a pleasure. And I guess it's not going to be easy, but that's the motivation.
Well, hopefully it'll turn out well for you. Thanks again, Patrice.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, now we're going to get into a regular feature here on the show, promotion relegation. We each pick a story we like and promote it, and a story that we don't like and relegate it. So, Grant,
yes,
as usual, I'll turn to you first and ask, for this week, who or what would you like to promote?
I am promoting the Brazilian footballer Ronaldinho.
You practiced it beforehand. You had
I know,
it right.
I had it.
Try again.
And I lost my composure in the box.
Wow. Ronaldinho.
We'll just call him the Brazilian footballer for now. Anyway.
There's only one of those.
Yeah, there's no possibility for confusion whatsoever. Anyway, he has missed two early morning practices already after reporting back to camp after the winter break for his club Flamengo in Brazil, and he's blaming this on insomnia.
Well, that's unfortunate.
I mean, I'm promoting him for the courage to do that, because he definitely has a reputation. We're talking about the Playboy lifestyle. I mean, the samba, the girls, the drugs, the nightclubs. He's known for all of that stuff. So for him to come out, I mean, he might genuinely have insomnia. We don't know.
Well, I mean,
I can't even read this. The headline is Flamengo's Ronaldinho blames insomnia.
No, you can't read that headline.
Blames insomnia for inability to train in the morning. And despite me mispronouncing it, I can't even read it without smirking. I mean, it sounds ridiculous.
Is there such a medical condition as voluntary insomnia?
Yes, it's called buying 13 vodka Red Bulls.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, that's definitely it.
Stay up all night watching MacGruber like I did.
So, Grant, you're promoting the fact that
I'm promoting his courage and actually coming out and saying that I have insomnia, because it sounds like you got to have a lot of balls if you're him to say, like, I've missed early morning practice with his reputation, and then say, well, it's because of my insomnia.
Grant, I'm sure that you've walked into work at some point and told your boss, well, you know, I just couldn't sleep last night, insomnia. Maybe.
Yeah, but I'm not a famous soccer player. Well, I mean, nobody gives a crap if I do it.
He's the only one in Brazil. Of course he's famous. That's why he gets all the girls in the parties.
Maybe he's going out dancing and drinking and carrying on like that because he knows he's not going to sleep anyways. Might as well have a little fun. What's the point of lying in bed awake for 8 hours?
Worrying about your life.
Yeah, what's he going to do?
All these horrible thoughts running through
your head. I'm fairly confident he's not laying awake worrying about his life.
Well, no. He's laying awake doing something, that's for sure. Jamie.
Oh my.
Who or what would you like to promote?
I am delving into the world of medical science.
As you do.
Or as I'm forced to do by my doctors. I don't know what that means. Never mind.
They delve into your world of medical science.
A doctor, this is a report that was published in the British Medical Journal. It was in December, but I just found it, and it's fantastic. It basically just warns this woman, a Manchester United fan, that watching soccer could kill her. The anxiety that it induces in her being at Old Trafford watching Manchester United play could literally kill her. It says the woman experiences palpitations, panic, lightheadedness, and even a, quote, sense of impending doom towards the end of most high-profile matches. On the occasions when they're winning, she doesn't get this. But this is more than just what every soccer fan feels, and certainly what every Canadian fan feels, even outside the games, just kind of on an everyday basis.
Yeah, I mean, that part about the impending sense of doom, I thought that's just part and parcel of kind of supporting the Canadians and the national team.
No,
you feel like that all the time.
Apparently, this isn't normal.
Well, neither is supporting the Canadian national team.
It goes a bit farther for this woman. They diagnosed her with Addison's disease, which is a chemical kind of imbalance where her body doesn't produce enough hormones to counteract the negative effects of stress. So she literally could just, you know, kind of die. But I think that basically what I'm getting out of this is basically just that what I feel watching the Canadian men's national team play is medically legitimate, and I'm promoting it for that. It's finally proving on a medical level what I feel as a matter of course watching the team play.
The thing about this that has me concerned now is because I've often compared sort of the feeling when you're watching like a very big match, it's very tense, it's getting near the end, it's nail-biting. I've often sort of compared it to the feeling that you get when, you know, if you're on high on some kind of drug. I don't know about that.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Or so you've heard.
I saw it on like a Woodstock documentary or something. But I guess this also means that drugs are bad for you too.
Yeah, probably.
Grant, you know what I'd say is especially potentially calamitous?
Oh,
combining the two.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, alcohol is not a drug. It's just a fun time drink. So
exactly.
We might want to forward
you
this.
You drink it and it makes you feel good.
We might want to email this study to Ronaldinho.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's up all night. He'll have plenty of time to read it.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure where why you're promoting a woman's potential death.
I'm not promoting that. It's very sad for her.
You
but
have
I'm
a history
promoting,
with this woman, don't you?
I'm promoting
this is all about.
I'm promoting the British Medical Journal for giving a legitimate scientific basis to the horrible, gut-wrenching anxiety that I feel when I'm watching the Canadian men's national team play.
Well, all right. Maybe it'll someday be named Doyle disease.
Oh, I hope so. I would probably have to die for that to happen.
Yeah, but you won't care anyway.
Yeah, but I don't want to die.
Well, anyway.
This sounds like an interesting discussion.
Yeah, jeez. I'm going to promote something that's also in the medical strain of things, but that has a much more positive light to it than the stories that you guys have just brought out. I am promoting the world's longest soccer game, which is a charity game being held in June and July in Edmonton, Alberta. It's a 66-hour charity match. They're looking to break the Guinness World Record for the longest continuous soccer game. This is all being organized by the Alberta Cancer Foundation in the hopes of raising $100,000 for new screening equipment at the Cross Cancer Institute in Edmonton, Alberta. Game takes place, from what I read, June 28th to July 1st. They're looking to raise $100,000. So, I'm sure you can find it.
That's not funny.
But why does it have to be funny?
We're in the business of merrymaking.
Is that what we're in the business of?
I have no idea.
All right.
You just wanted to say merrymaking.
Yes.
Chick. Well, fine, Grant. Even though there's nothing droll to be said about it, it is something that's worth promoting, I think, both in the sense that it's positive and I'm promoting it. So if you live in the Edmonton area or, I guess, anywhere in Alberta or nearby, check into it. I don't know. You might be able to take part or raise money for it or just have something to do with it. And whether or not, you know, no matter how much money it raises, if it gets a bunch of Canadian soccer players into the Guinness World Record book and raises money for cancer research, double plus good. Grant?
Yes.
Who or what are you going to relegate?
I am relegating cyberbullying.
Okay. You keep looking at me as if like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
I'm going to do
it. Where's the merrymaking coming out of this one?
Am I supposed to stand up for cyberbullying, Grant?
Well, if you want to.
I don't really want
to. I'm relegating cyberbullying. I wrote about this earlier this week on Canadian Soccer News. Izzy Nakajima-Faran, the Canadian midfielder who plays in the A-League in Australia for the Brisbane Roar. The goalkeeping coach for one of his sort of rival clubs, Scott Higgins, spent last weekend, while Izzy was playing, the whole game sort of trashing him on Twitter, calling him soft, saying he goes down too easily, saying, oh, you know, he looks like he was just hit by Mike Tyson, and just generally kind of being a dick.
That's a nice topical reference, Mike Tyson. He's knocked out a lot of guys recently.
That's true. Well, no, I mean, that's what he said. That's what he wrote.
No, I know, but if you're going to mock somebody, at least pick a contemporary boxer.
I'm fairly confident, even though I like Izzy Nakajima-Faran, if Mike Tyson punched him, he would probably go down still. So I think it's still a fair reference.
Yeah, but how's Mike Tyson getting out onto the soccer field in Australia?
Even a current Mike Tyson.
I don't know about the quality of the A-League. Maybe he plays there already.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing for me that's kind of, I don't know if it's ironic about this or not, but is sort of to call someone soft and then sort of, I mean, I know Twitter isn't anonymous, but you're still sort of, I mean, it's one thing if you say it to someone's face, but if you're just sort of trashing them from another location, it's not really a very manly way to go about calling someone out.
So, Grant, that's why you said that you're relegating cyberbullying. You like real bullying. If someone's going to bully someone,
of course.
Do it in real life.
If it's on the playground, yes. If it's under the monkey bar, sure, but not in the internet.
Remember, kids, if you're a bully on the playground, you too could have a 16-year gap between times you get to touch a girl's waist.
Well, you can fill the space with Playboy.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Jamie, who or what would you like to relegate?
Well, speaking of Playboy,
here we go.
I'm going to read this headline from The Guardian because I think it's a very good intro to what I'm about to talk about. Quote, Hanover coach asks his players to reveal their sexual desires.
What?
This is Bundesliga team Hanover 96. Their coach, Mirko Slomka, apparently has gotten quite a little interest in a 128-question personality psychological survey. It's called the Rice test. And basically, a lot of these questions just get at kind of sexual motivation and sexual desires. And he's asked his players to fill out this survey so that he can better understand them. He says, with this test, I will know how I can best reach each player. Now, he has filled out the thing for himself. And he said, you can all take a look. It's perfectly open for you. If I'm going to be reading your thing, then you can read mine, and you can know what kind of weird sexual stuff I get into.
You sure it's not just for his benefit? He doesn't actually care what the players are interested in. It's just like,
it may very well be. He might just be.
Hey,
I mean, there's questions. Well, there are questions such as, there's statements, and you rate them on how true or untrue they are. And I am what you could call sexually unrestrained. Quote, I want any sex I can get. I have a lot of erotic fantasies. And you rate them on a scale of -3 to +3.
Now, see,
I'm going to rate this whole discussion -10.
Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. If he was managing in England, he really wanted to know the sexual preferences of his players, he would just have to read the tabloids.
Hi, old.
He wouldn't have to do this
true.
At all, you know?
Well, this is Germany. Things are different. People, sure. It's a bit more restrained, maybe. So I'm relegating this because there's a lot of things you just don't need to know about your coworkers, especially when you make your living wearing shorts.
I don't know. I mean, maybe there are players on the team who would perform better with gag balls and leather chaps. It doesn't really go within the FIFA equipment requirements, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
You never know.
And maybe he would be better off turning their locker room into a medieval sex dungeon. There's only one way to find out, and I believe it's with this test.
He wouldn't be the manager. He would be the dungeon master.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone keep track of Hanover's trajectory over the rest of the season, and we'll see how well this unrestrained sexuality does for them. I'm going to relegate... It has nothing to do with either of these. I'm going to relegate a Canadian icon, Joseph Armand Bombardier, specifically for inventing the snowmobile. I know that it's given people a lot of fun, a lot of good times, and in many parts of the country, it's not just a recreational vehicle. It's something that people need in order to survive. But with the news that Nicholas Lindsay of Toronto FC Academy and Toronto FC, promising upcoming player for Toronto FC and potentially the Canadian setup, is going to miss another season. He missed all of 2011. He's going to miss all of 2012 due to the completely mangled way in which his knee ended up due to an off-season snowmobiling accident between 2010 and 2011. I'm going to go back in time and relegate Mr. Bombardier for inventing the snowmobile to begin with. I realize that if he hadn't done so, the whole existence of the country would be a lot different and somebody else probably just would have invented it anyway. But I'm essentially trying to find a roundabout way to relegate the fact that Nicholas Lindsay is still injured and probably now has no career ahead of him, unfortunately.
If he'd have been on snowshoes, this would never have happened.
You're right, Grant. So many tragedies could have been avoided through the usage.
It's hard to go down with a brutal snowshoeing injury, I imagine.
Through the usage of snowshoes. That's the end of promotion and relegation, but not the end of the show because we, of course, need to get into... Taste the trivia. We don't need to, but we're going to anyway. Mm-hmm. This is the weekly segment in which not only the answers, but also the questions to the trivia challenge are provided by you, the listeners. Last week, the question was, we thought, pretty tough, but, you know, a couple of people got it right. Name five players of Greek heritage who've played for the Canadian men's national team.
I think it actually was pretty tough because what Greek heritage means seemed to be up in the air.
That's true. We did have a bit of a controversy there with a player who we weren't quite sure
about. I thought we were going to get a trip to Greece out of it somehow.
Well, we're
literally
still...
Go and start verifying people's grandparents.
Number one, who's going to pay for that? Number two, how are we qualified to to quantify people's
muddle it up with niggling details.
Anyway, last week named five players. The five players that were named were Kenny Stamatopoulos, David Fronomatis, Stathis Kapos, John Limniadis, former head coach of the Montreal Impact, and Nick Papadakis. The correct answer, or that correct answer, was given to us by Navi Sidhu, who is now the proud owner of a zip-up jacket courtesy of Umbro Canada. And he's also been providing us with this week's question, which is, and it's very appropriately themed. He didn't even know that this was coming, but here's the question he provided, sight unseen. Patrice Bernier scored Canada's only goal of the 1995 U-17 World Cup. In the game in which Bernier scored that goal, who were Canada's three substitutes, and at what minute did each of them come into the match? So that's six pieces of information we need, three player names, the minutes at which they came into that match in the U-17 World Cup in 1995. If you have the correct answer, or you think you do, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you were the first one to provide the correct answer, you will not only provide the answer for the question, I always screw that up, for next week's Taste the Trivia, you will also be the winner of a new zip-up jacket, courtesy of Umbro/Umbro Canada. Now, next week, what we're also going to have, we vaguely discussed this ahead of time, and then we forgot to discuss it before we went on the air. But let's do it now. Gentlemen, do we want to open things up to questions from the audience next week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
I think that we do. So this has nothing to do whatsoever with trivia, although there will be plenty of trivial words spoken as a result of it. We are going to throw things open to you, the listeners, for next week. We would like you to send us questions that you would like us to answer about, you know, about the domestic teams, national teams, pretty much anything that we talk about on this show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not trivia questions, not who scored which goal.
About us personally, I suppose.
Yeah, you know.
If you want to go there. I'm not sure why you would, but.
Well, we do kind of open ourselves up a bit. Our opinions about any stories that have come out as of late or general things, pretty much any questions you'd like to hear us answer on the show. You can find us on our Facebook page and leave some questions there, facebook.com/somecanadianguys. You can email us, canadiansoccerguys@gmail.com. And you can, as always, find us on Twitter. I am at CDN Soccer Blog. Grant, where are you?
SCG Grant.
Jamie, where are you?
Doyle_Jamie. I almost said Doyle_Twitter there. That wouldn't be right. Doyle_Jamie.
You can also follow Doyle_Twitter.
Take him away, toys.
It's Jamie's cousin, Twitter Doyle. Just a very unfortunately. What was that English guy who named his kid Trendy?
Trendy.
Yeah. Trendy Doyle.
Trendy Doyle. There's no such thing as a Trendy Doyle. I can tell you that right now.
What about Republic of Doyle? That show got Russell Crowe on it. He's pretty trendy.
Well, I've never had Russell Crowe on me. I don't know what that means. Let's move on.
Let's delve into your medical history. Oh, wait, no. Nothing to move on to. It's the end of the show. We'll be yammering at you again next week and hopefully answering some of your questions. Till then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.